Welcome to episode 7 of The Andrew Hansen Show. My guest this week is affiliate marketing expert and podcasting superstar, Mark Mason from LateNightIM.com. Mark has a very interesting and unique story because he's been doing business online now for 10 years. He has a day job with a company that he actually likes and that he has no intention to quit. A story that you don't hear every day. It was interesting hearing Mark describe why he likes his job so much, because it allowed us a discussion of what's truly important to us as humans to get from our working lives, whether or not they're entrepreneurial. We got to touch on the ways in which business online sometimes sets up promises for people that either can't be achieved or aren't very rewarding, even if they are. We got to talk instead about what's truly valuable in work and what we all might aim at, no matter how many hours we spend on our jobs or who it is we work for, ourselves or someone else. I also got to ask Mark how he was able to build a business online with a full-time job, a family, and a little league baseball team to coach on the weekends. And he gave some really practical tips about how he made huge progress in his business, even when he only had minutes in a day to spend. I think you'll really like that part. We talked about the points one has to be clear on before hoping to have a business be a success. Points a lot of times that have to do with you rather than your business model. We talked about what it really means to have freedom in your business, not the beach and cocktails kind of freedom. And Mark also told us about how to test a samurai sword's effectiveness by seeing how many human beings it can slice through. I'm just going to leave that there with absolutely no context at all. I'll turn over to Mark now. I really hope you like this chat. Mark Mason, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, man. I am honored. I was so excited for you to learn that after all this time, you had finally come to your senses and started your own podcast. Well done.
It did take a while, and I must say, you were no help. I messaged you on Skype months ago now, months before the beginning. I said, hey, Mark, I think I might start a podcast. Can you help me by telling me what microphone I should get? Silence. Nothing.
Yes. Yeah, that's the wrong medium for me, man. You know how, you know, some people preferentially look at some things more than others. Only thing I use Skype for is interviews. That's the only time I turn it on, because it just explodes every time I turn it on with people messaging me and stuff. So I just had to stop using it.
I get it. All is forgiven. And we've made this happen today, and I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, man. But I'm always confused about what country you're in. So where are you now?
I'm sometimes confused about what country I'm in. We're in Australia at the moment. And yeah, we'll be here for another 2 or 3 weeks.
Excellent. Well, safe travels to you, my friend.
Thank you. It's good to talk to you.
What do you want to talk about?
Mate, we have so much to talk about. There's so many possible directions for this call. First, it has to be understood, I think, by people how iconic a discussion this is. I must have spoken on your podcast 5 times now. In fact, more than that, yours is the only podcast that I've ever spoken on, I think, up until starting my own.
Yeah, you're quite famous with my podcast audience, and they will be thrilled to hear that I'm on your show, which I will tell them this week. So they'll be glad to hear all about that.
It was a thing that I always enjoyed doing. We always had a lot of fun in our chats. And I have to say, it was more than a small influence on me starting something of my own. After all that time, I finally got the message.
Well, great. I feel honored to have made that small contribution in addition to this small one that I'm about to make now.
So you've been doing podcasts since before it was cool. It took me ages to realize this was something worth doing, but you've been out for a long time now. When did you start?
Yeah, I started, and I've been on and off, and I've had a couple of shows, but the first time I actually released a show to iTunes was in 2009.
Wow. And you've got like 100 episodes or something now, right?
Yeah, I'm back at it on a regular basis, weekly, talking about internet marketing and affiliate marketing and small business, solopreneur stuff. And episode 104 goes live Thursday.
crazy. I finally get a sense of how much work that is to have produced 100 episodes. So, yeah, that's no small feat. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. It gets easier with time with regard to the technical stuff, which you can outsource increasingly. And, you know, it's just a matter really of the logistics of deciding how to create value for your audience. You know, you start off with all these ideas, and then after a while, your audience will start, you know, asking you to do certain things, and it takes on a life of its own. It's a lot of fun. You're going to love it.
I see. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to getting to that point. When you started out with your podcast, what was your motivation? Like, why'd you do that?
I love the sound of my own voice. No, I'm kidding.
Happy to go along with that because I feel a little bit the same way. It's one of my great flaws.
You know, for me, there were two big influences in my internet marketing life in the very beginning back in 2007. One was this ebook that I bought online called Niche Marketing on Crack, which you may or may not be familiar with that.
Sounds dodgy.
And then it was very dodgy, and the guy that wrote it was even dodgier. But it turns out there was great wisdom in that, and I think I still have my copy, and actually, Andrew, it's quite remarkable. There are so many things in that are still fundamentally true today with niche sites that I'm still building today, that, you know, and stuff that you're still teaching today. It just goes to show you that, you know, even back then, the principles were pretty fundamental. Some of the tactics have changed, but a lot of the underlying marketing stuff that's in there is still quite valid. But the other thing that influenced me was this podcast that I was listening to at the time from two guys that eventually became great friends of mine and ended up being the way that I became friends with Pat Flynn and Cliff Ravenscraft and a bunch of these guys that I hang out with online now. And that was Internet Business Mastery Podcast.
Okay.
And I listened to that. That's Jeremy Franzen and Jason Van Orden. And I listened to those guys for a long time. And between, you know, those two sources, really, that's really how I got started. So once I had 2 or 3 years under my belt of internet marketing, I knew I wanted to follow that example and just, you know, reach people and help them understand what was possible.
Right. And so you're the bigger picture, you're 2 or 3 years into doing internet marketing for yourself. You've done a ton of things over the years in terms of building different sites, going into different niches. What were you working on at that time?
Gosh, you know, back in 2009, I had a bunch of AdSense sites. You know, that was back during I don't know if it's quite the height of AdSense, but you could really, it was before all the animal algorithms with Google, and you could really put up junk and get amazing amounts of revenue. And I can remember at one point counting the number of domains that I had in Namecheap. I've used Namecheap since the very beginning,
yeah.
And it was over 100. And, yeah. You know, at that time, even you and I were working together, or you were working on a product that I was using. I can't remember the name of it, but it was a product for, you know, manufacturing and managing this massive array of sites. Can't remember the name of that thing now, but so that's the kind of thing that I was working on. And while I was doing that to generate revenue, I also had this blog at the time, which was called masonworld.com. And it was a domain that I had had, you know, since you could start buying domains, basically. And I had just started blogging. And I was blogging about this internet experience, and more people were kind of following me. And then I decided to start the podcast. And out of that grew the current brand, which has been around for a while, called Late Night Internet Marketing, because marketing is a part-time thing for me because, as you know, I have a day job.
Mm-hmm. People ask me, it's a perennial question, not just for me, but others, about when you start out having some success, like you've got some good sites, why would you ever want to share what you do with other people? Don't you just want to keep building sites and make as much money as you can?
Yeah, I have three answers, and they're all true, I think. One of them is philosophical. And the philosophical thing is that's a scarcity mentality point of view, you know, where you kind of want to keep everything for yourself and you know, there's no room to help other people and you just, you know, want to focus on building your empire. I really get a lot of satisfaction out of helping people. And in fact, I would rather sit here and have this conversation with you that I know is going to go out to your audience than, you know, research article number 4,917 on some obscure niche. I mean, it's just more fun for me. So that's sort of the philosophical, true answer. But the other thing I think is, besides the satisfaction thing, that's kind of a lonely, boring life. I mean, yes, you can certainly do it, but I think, you know, if money is the only reason that you're doing something, you can certainly do that and be successful, and many people do. But for me, I already have a job, you know, where that pays the light bill. So I was really looking for something more, something that, you know, was more satisfying and gratifying and fun. I mean, for me, it's certainly more than a hobby, but it has that hobby quality that if it's an internet marketing thing and it's not fun, I don't do it. You know, I don't have to plow through something that I don't want to do just because I've got to make the mortgage, right? So for me, I knew after building 100 sites that you know, that just wasn't all that great for me personally.
Do you think that sort of detachment from the, maybe detachment isn't the right word, but that's a level of detachment from the financial success of it has actually had some contribution to your success with marketing online?
Yeah, some contribution to the success and some limiting behavior. So, you know, I certainly true that there are people who listen to my podcast, for example, and follow me online that do so because they feel like they can trust me because I'm not constantly trying to take money out of their wallet. Mm-hmm. And I know this is something that's always been very important to you over the years. You know, it has to be about the people and the value that you create and not about the dollar, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, I think that's helped me a lot. On the other hand, there have been times where, I don't have the same kind of hustle as somebody who is under a tremendous amount of pressure and they have to succeed or they're going to have to go get a job delivering pizza. You know, I'm not in that situation. And so I think there are two sides to that coin. And I am criticized is too strong a word, but I'm in a pretty amazing mastermind group. And a lot of time those guys in the meetings that we have where I'm on the hot seat, where I'm being challenged about my progress and what I've done, those guys will challenge me about whether or not I want it badly enough. So I think, you know, that's sort of the other side of that coin.
The question is what?
Yeah, want that level of success. And I think you've got the right question. You have to know why you're doing something. And for me, I think, you know, the most gratifying times for me, Andrew, is, and I know you've had this exact same experience because we've talked about it, when someone comes up to you and says, God, what you said to me or what you taught me to do or what, you know, what I learned from you, that changed my life. You know, now I can, you know, I was able to have a certain success, or I bought a car, or I paid for my mom's medical bills, or whatever it is, you know, even if it's a small thing like, boy, you really made me realize what was possible, and now I'm doing all these things. That, to me, that's the why. That's the biggest why for me. And of course, people need to make money, and I like to make money too, and I do make money, and that's part of it. But it's not the biggest part, at least not for me.
Hmm. I really think having that extra addition of your job and maybe a little less "quote unquote" hustle. From everything you've said, it sounds like it was really helpful for you. It sounds like you might not have been as rewarded by doing this work had you, say, left a day job and had it be your full-time hustle than the alternative.
I might have made compromises or done things that I might not have exactly wanted to do. On the other hand, you know, if I flip it and I, you know, look at what Andrew Hansen can do. So, you know, you've put on courses where you've helped, you know, 500 people at a time or 1,000 people at a time. And we both know how much work that is, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like a 24-hour a day job for 8 weeks or however long the thing runs. Mm-hmm. And even then, you're still behind, right? Even with all of that, and working for months in advance to get material ready ahead of time and building sites and handling customer service and all that kind of stuff that you do, that's not something I can really do and have a full-time job. So again, you know, there's always this dichotomy that's going on, this tension between how much I commit to the internet business and how much I hang on to the day job thing. And, you know, I'm quite fortunate. I have a day job that I truly love. I love the people. I love the work. I get to travel internationally. It's just really spectacular. I'm well compensated. You know, all of the things that you would want, I have. And so I'm very fortunate in that way. So it's an interesting balance for sure.
I definitely wanted to talk more about that. So, I mean, it's a situation that's unusual for a lot of people. As you know, a lot of people have got jobs to get into internet marketing because they want to be out of their jobs. You have no kind of feelings like that. You're not trying to quit this job at all. Even if, let's say, even if your business grew, if your income from your online stuff grew, you wouldn't be trading off this job, right?
Yeah, I think it would have to grow to be very large to entice me to give up all of the other interesting parts of the business. So my day job is about a lot more than just money. Like I alluded to, it's about people and travel and benefits and intellectual stimulation and mm-hmm. a lot of other things. I get to scratch my engineering itch there. I'm an electrical engineer by training. Okay. I have a couple of degrees in electrical engineering, and I get to build stuff that makes the world better. And that's cool. I mean, it's really neat. And I work with customers from all over the world, and we have factories all over the world, and it's just a really, really great job. And it's given me a lot over the life. I've been at the company that I'm at for my day job for 25 years this year. And that's also quite unusual in this day and age. And that has been incredibly satisfying. A lot of lifelong relationships have come out of that work. And so, you know, I have this whole separate life where I'm published online as an author in the electrical engineering space. And I run conferences in electrical engineering, or, you know, at least I have in the past. And, you know, so there's this whole other thing that I would be really hesitant to give up. You know, I might cut it back and maybe I'd move the needle one way or another, depending on how things go. And so that's a possibility. But I think a more realistic scenario than I'm imagining is a retirement scenario where I decide I'm going to retire. And the opportunity for passive income in internet marketing is tremendous. And the opportunity for passive income in engineering is relatively close to zero. I mean, you get passive in engineering and stuff stops working. So, I mean, right. You know, so I think, you know, at some point when I decide to downshift and maybe work 20 hours a week for 10 years, that's where internet marketing and a lifestyle business for me becomes magical. And then this 10 years of investment that I've got on the internet marketing side, I think will really pay off.
Right. Well, this is really interesting because this is a conversation to me about what we want from our work, all of us. So if I really think, despite entrepreneurs so often thinking that they're better than other people, that we all have jobs in one way or another, even if you feel as though you've escaped yours. And what you were describing there was kind of was what's important to you in work, what's important for there to be in your professional life. And some of those things are really difficult to get from a business online, and not everyone realizes that. I'm sure you'll agree. Like the you mentioned that getting to work with interesting people. Online, you do get to work with interesting people, but you don't spend a lot of face-to-face time with them. And if that's something important to you, you might feel like you're missing that in internet marketing. Or getting to feel like you build things that change the world. Well, there's a small number of people who build their little internet businesses online who are doing that, but there's not that many, at least not at this stage. So what it sounds like what you've identified are some, or put another way, you've just got a pretty clear sense after all this time about what you really value about the work that you do.
Yeah, I'll give you another great example. I have three daughters and one son, as you know. And so I care about what it's like for women in the world. And in the engineering world, especially in the South, in the United States, at least historically, women have had to fight their way up. And the company that I work at is very proactive about having a workplace that puts everyone on equal footing, and that's across gender boundaries and sexual orientation and race and religion and the whole thing. I mean, it's a very big deal, and we have a lot of integrity in my company around that kind of issue. And so one of the things that I'm able to do is participate actively in that. For a long time, I was on the steering committee, sort of board of directors for the company's women's initiative to worry about things like whether or not working moms had the right kind of resources to manage their work-life balance, and whether or not there were an adequate number of nursing rooms and buildings so that working women could nurse if they needed to, and making sure that they were treated equally with regard to pay, and, you know, just all these kind of things. And also other things like, bringing in consulting for women to talk about things like communicating in the workplace and how to be a strong leader without coming off as sometimes grumpy men are thought of as really strong, good leaders, and grumpy women are thought of as something less flattering. And so, you know, how do you manage and work through all that? Well, I get to do stuff like that in my day job, you know? So, okay. So that's a kind of an example of something that's even further off the beaten path from engineering. And certainly I could find opportunities to do that in the community, but in my day job, that's just all right there.
Right. It's very, very fortunate. It sounds like just great work to be able to do, to be able to spend your time on.
Yeah, I do. I do feel incredibly fortunate. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. So what's on the other side of that coin? I mean, I'm fortunate enough, and this is sometimes I feel embarrassed even saying it, but it's been such a long time since I've had anything that could be described as a regular job that I'm really out of the loop on this world. A lot of people on your list, on my list, have jobs that they want to quit. And I'm aware that there's this idea that it's your job isn't necessarily just worth quitting because it's a job. But what is it? What's on the other side of the coin to what you're talking about? What makes jobs really bad? What makes things, what makes them that people want to quit? What should they be wanting to escape from?
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing to look out for, and I know this is something that you'll resonate with because, you know, from knowing you, I know you have such strong values around certain topics, especially around, you know, people topics and human rights and these sort of things. Mm. If you are working for someone where the corporate values in the way people are treated don't align with your personal values about the way people should be treated, that is a major red flag. Okay. Mm. So, I mean, and I think when you get right down to the root of a lot of cubicle escape stories where you hear about these people that absolutely hate their job. Sometimes it's because the people are underemployed. They're way smarter for whatever reason than the job that they've landed in. And so they're bored out of their mind and they're just underemployed, and their intelligence is manifested in this entrepreneurial journey, and that scratches that itch and that's what triggers them. But I think the other really common example is they're working for some soulless, heartless, you know, squeezing blood from a stone kind of company that is not valuing employees. And and the human element, and understanding that employees really are the key resource that they have. If you have those kind of values and your company doesn't, or if you care about how homosexuals are treated in the workplace and your company has terrible policies, or they have a terrible culture around that, or whatever it is that your personal values are, if your company doesn't reflect those, that mismatch, boy, that can really cause you a lot of pain. And I think that's really at the root cause of why a lot of people want to get out of their jobs.
You think there'll be a scenario eventually where you'll be called upon to act on these corporate values because it's your work, it's your employment, and it will feel so painful since they're in such conflict with your own values that it'll be intolerable?
Yeah, I think that happens to people. And I think, you know, that's so far from the situation that I'm in personally. I think that's one of the reasons I love where I'm at, because I don't see that ever happening to me in my workplace, because it's quite the opposite of what I've described. But I do think that people who are treated poorly, or that they see others around them treated poorly or put in situations that are counter to their values, that's a real good reason to look for something else. And the great thing about entrepreneurship and being a solo entrepreneur is it gives you the opportunity to define those values and act on them yourself.
I understand. You get to remake something you feel like you might not have had in the corporate culture you came from.
Exactly.
What was interesting to me as well is something that was absent from your answer. This, I mean, it's so popular at the moment to talk about freedom. Everybody wants freedom from their work. You don't want freedom from your job.
You know, I have so much freedom in my job right now. It's really a non-issue for me. You know, as a professional, I'm not punching a time clock. My responsibility at my day job is to get the tasks in front of me completed. And no one cares whether I do that at Starbucks or in the employee cafeteria or out on the lawn or at my desk or at my house while a contractor is working on my house or at 3 o'clock in the morning. The lines for me between work and outside of work are pretty blurry, because I'm trusted to get my job done, and I do now. And you know, and I have employees. I've got one guy that comes in at 6 o'clock every morning because he likes to get in before the traffic, and he's absolutely amazing. And I have another guy that stays up late and plays soccer or I guess you would say football. And he often rolls in about 9:30, and both of those are fine. We, you know, everybody gets their work done. And the interesting thing about a global company as well, you know, I mentioned we have factories all over the world. It's not unusual for me to be on the phone with Malaysia or the Philippines or you know, some country in what I like to describe as the wrong time zone. By the way, this would include Australia.
It's me. That's where I am now. Got it.
Yeah, I know, right. And so to be on the phone at 10 or 11 o'clock at night or 6 in the morning is normal. So all these lines get blurred. And so freedom for me doesn't mean the same thing that it means for someone who's punching a time card and has to be there at 8 o'clock and you know, gone at 5. And a lot of that goes to empowerment. And I think that's another one of the things that's missing in a lot of these jobs and makes people want to leave. People aren't empowered to make their own decisions. Part of being underemployed is not being given the responsibility and privilege of making your own decisions. And that's another reason to leave a job.
It's funny because when you're describing this lifestyle of yours, it sounds very much like my own. I mean, I start a day and I know that there's a handful of things that need to get done. And I know that that day I'll be working till those things are done, unless I want to not have them done, in which case I know they'll have to be done tomorrow. And sometimes that will mean they're finished by lunchtime and then I'll hang out with the family for the rest of the day. And sometimes that means I'll still be going at 8 o'clock. But there's no real difference there to what you described.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that is a sort of freedom. It's a sort of intellectual freedom and a sort of empowerment to own to have ownership of the things that need to be done, and to have the integrity to get the work done. And the rest of it is just details that goes more to management culture and stuff like that. And again, if you're in a company with a value system where employees are not trusted, I don't trust you to go run an errand in the middle of the day because I'm afraid as a company that you're going to steal that 30 minutes from me. If that's the culture you're in, well, that's crap. And that's why people want to leave that company. But if it's a company that says, hey, I know you'll be a more productive employee and happier and do a better job for me if I let you go to the bank to sign your mortgage papers when you need to or whatever, you know, that level of trust, and there's reciprocity there. All kinds of good things come when you trust employees. And that's a corporate culture thing that, you know, that's really important. And when those things are missing, that's one of the reasons people don't want to work in a 9-to-5 job.
It makes a lot of sense. You'll like this one. There's a someone in my life very close to me who we were talking about this conversation about productivity and the way you work, and they work in the finance industry. So sometimes long hours, sometimes kind of high stress kind of stuff. And they said, if I finish a task in the – they said, sorry, if I have a set of things that I have to finish in a day, I will try to make them take – the full day. And I said, what? Why? If something takes 3 hours for you to finish, don't you just want to finish that? And they said, no, I don't want to finish that because I know that if I finish that set of things, I'll just get another set of things and then I'll have to finish those by the end of the day. And so it's the exact opposite of what we're talking about. They'll willingly extend out tasks because they know it's connected to what you're saying, because it's the opposite of a kind of like respect and trust in employees. There'll be no reward for her being more efficient in these things. There will be almost a punishment.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's so upside down. I mean, you know, I don't even know where to start. But if one of my team came to me and ever told me that story in confidence, I would probably cry right there in my office. I mean,
you failed.
That's just so horrible. That would be such a failure on my part, because you know, that just is so counterintuitive and so counter to the kind of productivity that we want to have. It makes no sense.
Right. Super aggressive too, right? Somebody in your charge finishes something and they've done such a good job. It's done in a quality fashion. And then your first thought is, all right, let me try to drive them really into the ground before the day's end. Here you go, have another two or three things to do.
Yeah, I think that's playing the short game, right? I mean, you see this all the time in life. There's people that are going to try and squeeze everything they can out of something. Again, it's sort of a scarcity mentality. I've got to get everything out of people that I can right now, because who knows what's going to happen tomorrow. And then there's more of a long game mentality. And I'll tell you, you know, jobs, whether it's internet marketing or a corporate job, whatever career it is that you're investing your soul into, that needs to be looked at as a marathon, not a sprint, right? I mean, you got to be in these things for the long haul, and having, you know, having someone who's coaching you about how to run your race, trying to get you to sprint all the time, that's going to be a bad thing in the long run.
Absolutely. So I want to come back to freedom just quickly, because it feels like so many people are thinking about this now, particularly younger people. I was reading something recently about how younger people, when they're seeking their employment now, they care less about the amount of money they earn and more about the amount of flexibility that they have, and they're taking pay cuts and lower paid jobs that offer more options for either location independence or being able to work at home and whatever else. But I think people have different ideas of freedom. People have this, and there's a kind of freedom that a lot of people seem to want, which is very different to the one you described. It's like a beaches and cocktails kind of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You've got no interest in that in your own life.
Oh, man. I don't really like the beach very much, to be honest with you. This is an ongoing debate between my wife and I. And, you know, to me, the beach is hot and sandy. You get dirty. Salt water is kind of yucky. I mean, I just, there are jellyfish. I mean, there's just nothing good about the beach. But I do understand this life of leisure. Mm-hmm. And to me, you know, I come from a background where we didn't have a whole lot when I was a kid. I mean, we weren't poor by any stretch of the imagination, and by world standards, we were, you know, ridiculously wealthy. But for, you know, by United States standards, I wasn't the richest kid in the school. I was, you know, kind of lived in the on the cheap side of town. And my dad, when he got his job, his first job, he was a factory worker, and he worked his way up to line superintendent and on up to vice president, and all of that without a college degree. And he did all of that with sweat equity and hard work. And so whatever leisure we had, it was financed with sweat off of his brow. And so the idea of having a life of leisure without financing it is very confusing to me. So I don't know what it means. You know, I'm more of kind of from a work hard, play hard kind of school. So, you know, you work hard to have the opportunity to play hard. And I, you know, we play hard around here. I guarantee it.
Down here in Texas.
Yep. We're going to play hard. Going to drink beer and wrestle cows.
Shoot guns.
And I've done a lot of gun shooting. Maybe that's a whole separate episode. We could have a whole episode on firearms.
You tease me about Vegemite enough, I have to bring guns in.
Yeah, absolutely. So, so you know, it's confusing to me what it even means the issue is accomplishment is defined differently in these generations. And to me, part of accomplishment is working hard and generating value of some sort. And maybe that's different now.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that conversation is going to need to be had too, as these opportunities for creating these kinds of businesses and having these kinds of jobs increase, having people understand what their freedom is actually going to mean. Because, yeah, like you were saying, it can be very different to different people. And I think that picture of freedom that's so heavily advertised is, well, I think a lot of people, when they actually got it, would be surprised by how rewarding it really is.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and you and I both had this experience, but you more than me. I mean, thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people by now have approached you, Andrew, and said, I want a freedom lifestyle. I want financial independence and passive income. Teach me how. And then you attempt to teach them how. And the thing that stops them, whatever percentage gets stopped, and it's a pretty high percentage of people that don't even do the things that you've suggested that they do, is because they're unwilling to do the work. Not unable, not don't know what to do because you've taught them. It's they're just simply unwilling to do the work that's required to be successful. That just kills me. So, you know, that's there's a big gap there that somebody's going to have to answer for eventually.
So what do you think that is? I mean, I know exactly the kind of situations you're describing, exactly these kinds of people. Why would somebody be unwilling to do a thing that is going to help them?
Well, I can't speak for all the somebodies, but I know at least many of the somebodies are really looking for something for nothing. They're looking for an inequitable return. They want to invest $10 and get out $1,000. Instead of normally what you do in the world is you invest a dollar and you get out $1.10, or maybe on an amazing day you put in a dollar and you get out $2. But you don't put in a dollar and get out $1,000. You know, that's not how it works. That's not a sustainable system for anybody that's involved in it. That's why they don't exist. And so, you know, one of the big gaps I know is people that are just they have a misconception about what is possible and appropriate for a given amount of work. And once they realize the real amount of work that's required to have the Andrew Hansen lifestyle, you know, where you're just a man of means traveling the world and going to casinos or whatever it is that you do and throwing around $100 bills and buying $10,000 bottles of champagne and all that stuff.
I have no idea where you've gotten this story from. Carry on.
The internet lifestyle, right? You personally, to heck with me for a minute, an enormous amount of work over the years to build this business that you have, right? Mm. I mean, I think our British friends would say shed loads, right? I mean, it's just a ton, right? and that's real work that has to be done day in and day out, right? And it's some of it is just not very glamorous, right? And so I find people that are successful are willing to do that work in general, at least in the beginning, until they can afford to outsource it. And people that have a harder time being successful are those that aren't willing to do the work.
Right. Yeah, the last guy that I spoke to on the podcast, Kevin Wilkie, I'm not sure if you're familiar with his stuff, but he described this in an interesting way that I hadn't heard before. He said, business is a realm where, in the beginning, the way your reward is correlated with your effort is completely unlike anything else you do in life. The relationship is that you will do a lot of work for very little reward, perhaps no reward, for a long period of time. And after a certain period of time, then the rewards will start to pick up and the reward will grow exponentially. But we're in the habit of, because most people, we grew up with parents who had jobs. Even in our own life, we thought that what we would have is a job where we worked a certain number of hours and got paid a certain amount of money. And so we're in this, the baseline of our expectation is that we will work for a certain amount of time and receive a certain amount of money. And then when we come to start businesses and we work for a year, put in all this effort and we see nothing, it breaks something inside us. We think this must be a terrible failure if this is what's happening.
Yeah, that's genius. You know, I hadn't ever thought about that way, but that's spot on. And that same problem that you're describing for entrepreneurs, aspiring young executives in the corporate world have that same problem. And that is that you come in and you make whatever an entry level, you know, take your friend in finance, you're working 1,000 hours a day and you make whatever those entry level finance guys make. And what you really are wanting, you're aspiring to be director or managing director where you're making $1 million a year. But you have to toil away for 4 or 5 years before you get promoted to that level where you can reap those rewards, right? And it's the same sort of thing with internet business, and I think your guest's observation is brilliant, that it's front loaded. You've got to do the work now. What is it that Jennifer says? You do the work now that no one else is willing to do, so you can live the life later that no one else is able to live. Isn't it Jennifer that says that?
I've seen that on a picture quote on the internet. The source is long gone in my mind.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's our pot pie girlfriend. Yeah, I think that I'm pretty sure that's her. So, yeah. Mm. And anyway, that's the key. I think you have to be willing to make the investment. And financial markets are the same way to some extent. I mean, you have to be willing to invest steadily over a long period of time before you really, you know, build up that retirement account or investment account or whatever to where there's enough principal in place to generate enough return for you to live on just the return. This is the same kind of idea. So I think this is more common in nature than you might realize.
So just to be clear, what we've said here is that by starting a business of your own, internet or not, you're not going to make money very quickly, and you're not going to have the kind of freedom that will allow you to sit on the beach and drink cocktails.
Yeah, absolutely. And even Taylor Swift. I mean, I don't know the whole story there, but how many voice lessons and, you know, crappy gigs did she play before she got her first record deal? I don't know the story there, but I'm sure there was some amount of investment of her sitting alone in her bedroom with her guitar and riding a nasty tour bus around before she became a multi-mega millionaire star with her own jet, right? I mean, it just didn't happen overnight for her either. It never does. Never, ever does.
Right. I want to come back to a different point in your story, in your life. Something quite admirable, I think, that you've done is you've had a job from the beginning, as well as other obligations in your own life. I mean, you have family, you have, I'm sure there's other things you do. I know you get drunk a lot. No, I was just kidding.
No, there's some truth to that.
A lot of drinking to do, but...
It is Texas, after all. We do a lot of drinking down here.
But, I mean, you've only ever had a small amount of time day-to-day to grow a business, to market a website, to sell products, to do any of this stuff. But you've done that very, very well over the years and very consistently now. Has there been any, I don't like to use secrets, but like how have you gone about that? How did that work?
Yeah, so I have a few, we won't call them principles, but I have a few key kind of ideas that I try to keep in front of me. And let me just say, I don't always get this right. I mean, I don't always take my own advice, but when people are trying to do this and they ask me this question, well, what's the trick? How do you do it? I think there's maybe just two or three things. One is you need to be very, 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 very clear about why you're doing what you're doing. And that is helpful when it's difficult to do, when you're a little sleepy, or it might be a little easier to watch the latest episode of NCIS or, some football or soccer game or something like that. Instead, turn the TV off and go work on your business because you know why you're doing it. So that's one thing, is to know why you're doing what you're doing.
And that's hard, isn't it? Especially, I mean, you're tired so at the end of a day, right? A lot of people say, look, I would love to have the motivation to work on this harder, but I get home at the end of the day, and then by the time the kids are in bed, and by the time I finish this, I just want to relax and watch some stupid TV.
Yeah, to those people, I say, go to bed and get up early.
Ah, interesting.
I mean, you know, Hal Elrod, great book, Miracle Morning, go read it. Get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and get your hour or 2 hours of incredibly productive, you know, drink your bulletproof coffee in the morning and rock and roll for a couple hours before you go into your day job, before your kids get up. I mean, people put up these false barriers like tired and motivation and I'm not saying people are not tired. I know they're tired. I get it. But it always comes down to, do you really want it bad enough? Do you know why you're doing it? I mean, you tell me you want a freedom business, but are you willing to work for it or not? Because if you're not, that means you don't really want it. And that's okay. It's okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay to dream about something and not be willing to make the effort, right?
I'm glad you said that.
The word can't is a really, boy, that sticks in my craw. I have an 11-year-old second baseman. I coach Little League Baseball. It's one of the things you said, you know, I do other things. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I do is I coach a successful 11-year-old baseball team. And I don't allow the use of the word can't on my baseball team. I mean, we may need more practice at doing something, or we may have a team that we find very difficult to beat for one reason or another, but we don't talk about can't. And in this entrepreneurial context, I think can't is a mistake. It might take you 10 times longer than somebody else. You may fall into the trap of comparing yourself to someone else and say, well, I can't do that like Johnny does it. That's not a requirement. The only requirement is to just go do the thing. And I think, you know, unless you lack the mental capacity to go do it, there is no can't.
Hmm. Yeah, I like that very much. So I interrupted you. I apologize. On the list things.
The why thing, and so that you can have the appropriate motivation. And then the other thing that I think is super critical is commit yourself to making some amount of progress every day, even if it's tiny. Do something. Do something every day. So let's take the example of you're building an affiliate website and you get home from work and you're just tired and you really don't feel like doing anything, but you know you need to write another article, and you got to decide what it, at least got to decide what it's going to be. And so maybe you research the competition and see what's popular on those websites and get some ideas for articles, or you do a little keyword research, and maybe you only do 10 or 20 minutes that night. And then maybe, and then more often than not, I think, you see something really interesting, and that 10 minutes turns into 20 and then 30. And then all of a sudden you've gotten so excited about it. You've written the outline for the article and you've got four or five references, and now it's 2 a.m. and the article's live and it's getting hits, all because instead of going to bed or going to get another beer or whatever it was you were going to do, watch NCIS or whatever, you just committed to just 10 or 15 minutes of work. Sometimes it will just be 10 or 15 minutes, but sometimes that's going to trigger you to do amazing things. And when you pile those up, Andrew, night after night after night, week after week after month for years, all of a sudden you get up one morning and you go, holy crap, look at all the stuff I've built, right? This website or this business or these products or whatever it is, I've incrementally built these over time. Look at all I've accumulated. Look at how the investment is accumulated. And it's exactly analogous to putting a few dollars in a savings account, because, or an investment account, because not only are you building principal, but that stuff that you built, it's growing on its own. That article you put out there, it's getting traffic on its own. It's getting shared. It's getting search engine rankings. Whatever's happening is happening to that thing. It's contributing to the authority of your site, which is helping other articles. You're building this thing and you're building momentum. And if you do that a little bit every day, you get that kind of result. But if you skip tonight and then maybe you skip tomorrow night and then the next night you maybe have a little bit of a cold, and then all of a sudden it's a week and you haven't done anything, you string a bunch of those weeks together and you're toast. And your dream is gone.
You're kind of saying that consistency is more important than volume.
Absolutely more important. Critically more important. The consistency is critically more important than burst modes of big chunks of volume. Absolutely.
Very, very interesting. I've heard people talk about the subject of what to do when you don't have very much time. And the conversation is often like, yes, so what you should do in that situation is focus on the most important things that you have to get done. So you prioritize a little bit, and if you only have an hour, well, at least you'll know you'll be working on that most important thing. But it sounds like what you're saying here is it's actually more important. Like, let's say you sit down and you look at your most important thing and you just know you're not going to be able to get it done. It's more important to just get anything done, get any win on the board. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, it's certainly important to work on the important things first, and if you can. But I often, I get home and it's late and I've had baseball practice and spent time getting the kids bathed and in bed and talked to my wife, and now it's 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And whatever the most important thing is, I don't really want to do it. I mean, don't want to do it.
It's hard a lot of times, right?
It's hard. And sometimes maybe it's okay to work on the second most important thing or the third most important thing, as long as they're all important and, you're going to take responsibility for getting everything done that needs to be done eventually. Sometimes you have to recognize the fact that you're in a low energy state and manage that energy against whatever the task list you have in front of you. You can't always be at peak energy. And that's why this idea of getting up early is so powerful, because if you can really train yourself to do that, you imagine getting up in a quiet household where everyone's asleep and you really have a legitimate hour to yourself in the morning. Boy, you're awake. You have energy. You're mentally sharp, and you can really work on difficult tasks with a high amount of creativity. And that's a very effective approach that a lot of people are taking these days.
Despite being fundamentally opposed to the idea of waking any earlier in life than one has to, I promise you that I will include the link to that book that you mentioned below the podcast in the show notes.
And you should see if you can get Hal on your show. He has an amazing, amazing story about how he almost didn't survive and survived this amazing, life-threatening situation and came out of that and wrote these books. And he would be a really good guest for you. Highly recommended.
Interesting. Miracle Morning, right?
Miracle Morning, Hal Elrod.
Very cool. Hey, so I've always wanted to ask you a little bit more about your travels. I know you travel a lot for work. You always seem to be in different time zones and different spots. Where are you mainly going?
Now, mostly lately, and by lately I mean over the last 5 or 10 years, to Asia Pacific. So we have two parts of the business that I have had some responsibility for at times. The supplier side of the business, where we're getting materials and manufacturing done by suppliers, and our own factories. And we have factories in China and Japan and the Philippines and Malaysia and Singapore and, you know, et cetera, Korea, so on and so forth. Either some combination of supplier and factories, Vietnam, all across Asia Pacific. We also have design centers in India, which is a fascinating place. If you've never been to India, I highly recommend it. I'm all over Asia, mostly a little bit to Europe, but less so in recent years. We also have operations in Europe, but my focus has been mostly on the part of the business that's in Asia.
Okay. And what do you really like? When it's announced that you want to go here this month, what do you love?
Well, you know, I'm a big city kind of guy. So I love Singapore and Tokyo and Shanghai and Kuala Lumpur, and you know, these kind of big flashy cities with great hotel top bars that look over the whole city, and you know, fancy DJs, and you know, just the whole scene. I love the scene, and I love food. I'm a huge food and alcohol guy, as you know. So I love going to Singapore and having chili crab, and going to, you know, going to the Philippines and having steak Tagalog, and, you know, going to Japan and, of course, having some of the most amazing sushi. Although the last time I was in Japan, one of the other cool things about my day job is the people from my company that live in those countries, they're generally very enthusiastic to go places and do things when I come. So the last time I was in Japan, one of my good Japanese friends took me to a castle, a Shogun warrior castle in Osaka, Japan. And then we went around and had traditional Osaka style Japanese food, like these special pancakes and some stuff called takoyaki and a bunch of really cool stuff that I'd never had before that was completely different from the Japanese food that you might imagine if you frequent sushi bars. It's cool stuff like that. When I go to Taiwan, one of the very famous juicy dumpling places in Asia is a place that started in Taiwan called Din Tai Fung, and they have these juicy dumplings called Xiaolong Bao, and what they are, basically they're soup dumplings.
Soup dumpling?
Yeah. So I love these things, right? So this is one of the more famous places, and it's turned into a massive chain. Well, I challenged the local guys to take me to a place that was better than this place that I was familiar with, and they laughed at me. They said, "Oh, Mark, we know many places that are better than that." And sure enough, they took me to what they considered to be the best Xiaolong Bao place in all of Taipei. And it was truly amazing, right? And so those are the kind of the moments that, you know, people ask me, why don't you give up your day job? I mean, it's getting to eat, you know, getting to be toured around Taipei with, you know, some guy who's lived there all his life and going to his favorite restaurants, that's a pretty compelling reason to keep your job.
I mean, even for people who travel a lot, that kind of experience is tricky to access. Like, there's the other kind of traveler who sneers at the corporate traveler. This is like the backpacker, like I only travel with my, or what's it called? Oh, I forgot the name, but like I only travel with a camera and nothing else, and my bag is 10 kilograms and that's just heavy. And like, and they're super passionate about like getting the local experiences and all that. But they're the same people who stay at hostels for all their experience with other tourists and nobody else, and they find it very difficult to get out and meet people who would actually show them around to something like that. So what you're describing is a super difficult to access travel experience, but you get that as a part of the work that you do.
Yeah, I'm a weird combination of that, right? So I'm down with the light luggage. In fact, my rule for international travel is to never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, ever check luggage. So that's rule number one.
That's hard. Rule,
but I don't. I mean, I refuse to check luggage. The second thing is...
You just don't shower or change your clothes very often. I get it.
I just pack really efficiently. The other thing is, I'm staying in hotels generally, where if I hang my clothes in a bag on a doorknob, I come back in the evening and they're pressed and hanging in the closet, right? So that's way different than the youth hostel experience, right? I'm staying in, you know, the Conrad Hilton and places like that. So it's really, you know, kind of a different experience. But from, you know, as far as meeting the locals is concerned, when we go to these places, a lot of times they'll say, oh, you know, Mark, we want to take you to this fancy restaurant that we only ever go to when executives are in town. I'm like, no, dude, I want to go where you take your wife. Take me where you take your family. And I don't want to order. You order. You order your favorite. That's what I want to have. I want to eat your favorite meal. Let's just order that, right? And a lot of times, after you get to know these people, sometimes they'll invite you to their home. And I mean, it's just amazing, right? And so it's a really cool experience. So I am the despised corporate traveler, but I'm not at heart. At heart, I'm the youth hostel guy.
That is really cool. It's again, very lucky man. Tell me about your time in Tokyo. I spent 2 weeks there at the very beginning of my time traveling around, and I feel like I just didn't scratch the surface at all. It wasn't very well done. I keep hearing that Japanese men are just aggressive drinkers.
I'm sure you have Japanese and Korean listeners to your podcast, and I would say Japanese drinkers are very aggressive. And especially
enthusiastic.
They're very enthusiastic, especially salary men. These guys in these very high pressure corporate jobs, we party with those guys. Even more so in Korea, I think, is at least been my personal experience, that it's even up a notch in Korea, which is very interesting. Wow. I love Tokyo. It's very safe. The people are amazingly kind and generous and friendly, and you know, really the only challenge I ever have in Japan is language, which you know, you don't have to get very far off the beaten path to completely run out of any English at all. And I have been very, 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 very lost on the train there. I've gotten on the wrong train and gotten all turned around, and you know, you bring up Google Maps and it's in Japanese, and you know, you're hosed, right? But it's truly an amazing place. And Tokyo is massive, and so I haven't explored all of it, but there are also other places in Japan that are truly amazing as well. So you know, if you go out of Tokyo and go to Kyoto is one of the places, few places in Japan that the Allies agreed they would not bomb during World War II. So a lot of the historical structures are still in Kyoto. So that's also quite fantastic and amazing. Tokyo is Osaka, as I mentioned, is I mean, these castles, these shogun castles, they look like something out of a movie. I mean, in fact, they are often used in movies. I mean, they look sort of unbelievably amazing with these moats and all this complex architecture and these amazing samurai swords that were the, you know, the kind of the weapon of choice. And I'm told that these samurai swords, one of the tests of goodness of these swords were how many people that you could cut through in one swipe. One of the swords. I mean, I'm not kidding. That's really one of the ways that they measured the greatness of these swords.
So what, like they're standing one in front of another and there's like a row of people and somebody, what, do you slice through the stomach or something?
That's my understanding, apparently. Now, you know, I think after a while they quit that and they, you know, went to hay bales or, you know, some kind of scarecrow mannequin thing.
Understandably, but, human rights and all of that nonsense.
Yeah, but you know, we're talking about a really, really, really long time ago, and your enemy was fair game. And so this is at least the lore that is around these samurai swords. Truly amazing culture, but I can't say enough wonderful, amazing things about the Japanese people from a tourist perspective. I mean, it's just really a fantastic place to visit.
When I write the email for this episode of the podcast, I'm going to say something like Mark Mason discussed how many humans he thought he could cut through with a samurai sword.
That'll be great. Yeah, thank you very much for that.
Just to see.
Yeah.
Hey, and so have you? You're always going on about Vegemite. Have you been to Australia? Is that why you ended up eating it?
No, it's one of the few places. There are so many places I haven't been, but it's very near the top of my list. Of places to go, but I've never been there. I'm a scuba diver, so I wish to go scuba diving off the Great Barrier Reef, but I haven't made that yet. I will. That will happen. Maybe we'll do that together someday. But yeah, it would be fun. No, Vegemite. There was a song that was very popular in when I was in junior high school or high school in the 80s. That's how old I am, by the way. Uh-huh. That referenced a Vegemite sandwich, and for years I wondered what that was. There was no, you know, you didn't Google everything way back then. This was before electricity was invented, but you know, back in the Benjamin Franklin era. But you know, Vegemite's always been a curiosity of me, and Australian people that I have met over the years, including you, have contributed to my education about the glory of Vegemite.
You're talking about The Land Down Under, I suppose, the song.
Yeah. Yes, that's the song exactly, Vegemite Sandwich. Yeah.
I'm glad that the only thing that came from that for you was Vegemite Sandwich. If I'm doing karaoke in, well, anywhere outside Australia, I like to go for The Land Down Under as a song
really?
To do. Just because people from out, like in your part of the world, people recognize it and they're usually impressed. But it's a very difficult song to do at karaoke. The guy's voice is surprisingly deep.
Yeah, it's too rangy for me as well. I'm more of an Eagles or Don Henley sort of kind of guy. I can't go for the real rangy stuff.
What do you go for in the Eagles? Hotel California?
Well, it depends on the level of alcohol, but if I'm actually trying to sound decent, I'll go for something really simple like Peaceful, Easy Feeling or something like that, you know, something that's slow and easy. Uh-huh. I actually have done a lot of singing. That's one of my side hobbies. I sing and play guitar a little bit. So I have a set of guitar songs that I know I can sing because I play them myself on the guitar. So it's easy for me to pick out something out of my own set list to try and sing in karaoke. It's cheating in a certain after a fashion.
All right. So when we finally meet up in the end, we're going to eat a Vegemite sandwich, go to a karaoke bar. And you were always talking about Guinness as well. I guess that has to be involved.
Yeah, we need Alex with us for the Guinness, though, because, you know, when Alex was in Dallas, we were going to get together for a pint and never made that happen. But, yeah, I am a big fan of Guinness. And so we definitely need to do that. But I really think, you know, we need to somehow get Alex tied up in the whole Guinness thing.
He's passionate. He will easily. And for a man who cares about his calorie intake as much as Alex does, it always surprises me a little bit that he will always have a Guinness over a pint of whatever beer is on offer, in my experience.
Now, is he still allowed to go out drinking now that he's married? Does he still have permission to do that, or is he a kept man now?
He does, and Erin is such a good sport. She is a lot of fun. She's great, and often even the instigator herself.
Oh, very good. Okay, well, that's a good thing then. Very good.
Am I getting in trouble for saying that?
Yeah, now, Alex Miller, he has already been on the show. That's correct, right, as I recall?
He has, yeah, right after we were with them in Austin, which was cool.
Yeah, that's very cool. And I apologize for not meeting you down there, but I think, you know, I had some craziness going on in my family with some illness and stuff. So I'll catch you next time.
Yeah, it was crazy for us too. We really only had a day where we could get away from the friends that we were with there. So yeah, next time will be good, I think. I'm going to let you go, Mark. This has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you making the time for this, especially on such short notice.
Well, I will tell you, this is true. You have had such a fantastic, positive impact, not just on me, but on my community and the, you know, stuff that I've learned from you and, you know, in the stuff that you've contributed to my listeners. It's just, gosh, I mean, it's my pleasure. And I hope everyone who listens to this episode finds even just one little thing that they can take away. Maybe it's that they need to work a little bit on their business every day. Maybe it's that they need to have realistic expectations about return on investment as they start their business, to be patient, to stick after it. Maybe it's that they should go to Japan. Whatever it is, I hope they're able to take one thing away that's of value and that made this worth their time.
Nothing to do with cutting through humans with a sword. Ignore that.
Yeah, I think
focus on the business advice.
I need to it was the docent at the Japanese museum there at the thing that told me that. So I probably should fact check that a little bit before it was from like an official museum guy, right? So I mean, it's got to be true.
Mate, thanks for the kind words. And again, thanks for making time for this. I'll shoot you a link once she's live.
Oh, yeah. It's my great pleasure, sir. Thank you very much.
No, change my mind immediately. Yes. I don't know if we even can talk about this now, but I know you've got something new in the works at the moment. You're doing a new program or a course of some kind.
Yes, I am.
Is it too soon? Can we talk about this?
And it's not too soon. I am working on for release soon. There's already a landing page up for it. In my brand is late night internet marketing, and so I help people start and build businesses online. And as you and I have talked about many times, often the best thing for people to start with is affiliate marketing. And there are places you can go from there, but there's so many valuable things you can learn about internet business from building small affiliate websites that this is a very valuable thing. So I have a course that I'm working on for these people called Late Night Affiliate. And if you go to that landing page, latenightaffiliate.com, if you're interested in that sort of thing, there's a sign up page there where you can be notified when the thing goes live. And I'm anticipating that will be sometime in the next couple of months. And I'll let you know when that happens.
Cool. I'll probably be in touch with people at that time anyway.
Yeah, it's very compatible. It's very Andrew Hansen compatible. So I think that, you know, if you were to review it, my suspicion is you would look at it and go, yep, that makes sense. I understand that. And, you know, there's not a lot of crazy stuff that you would find off the wall at all.
Very cool. Again, mate, thank you very much. We should do this again.
Oh, man, I'd love to anytime. And I wish you luck. And I will I'll be excited to tell my listeners about this episode and get them over here listening to the Andrew Hansen.
Is that my voice, just by the way?
Not
just
exactly.
A general, I'm just still, like an introductory on that. Voice.
I need to get a little more nasally to get the full Andrew Hansen.
You're crazy, mate. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, thanks, man. Take care. Bye-bye.